Today's sponsor is Audible.com, which has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at audible.com/decode. Today's show is also sponsored by SoFi. SoFi offers student loan refinancing that saves members, on average, $19,000. They also partner with companies to help pay down employee student debt. See how SoFi can help you at SOFI.com. Terms and conditions apply at SoFi.com/legal.
Recode Radio presents Recode Decode, hosted by Kara Swisher, powered by Digital Media.
Hi, I'm Kara Swisher, executive editor of Recode. You may know me as the person putting all her money in her Casper mattress at the prospect of a Trump presidency, but in my spare time, I talk tech, and you're listening to Recode Decode, a podcast about tech and media's key players, big ideas, and how they're changing the world we live in. You can subscribe to Recode Decode at iTunes.com/RecodeDecode, and while you're there, leave us a review. Today in the red chair is Jamie Dimon, the president and CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. He served as the bank's CEO since 2006 and chairman of the board since 2007. He's here in Silicon Valley visiting tech companies to better understand the future of the innovation economy and made some time to meet with us at the Rosewood Hotel right on Sand Hill Road. We're in a large boardroom right now, so there might be an echo. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Kara, it's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us why you're here. What are you doing here in Silicon Valley?
So I come here all the time.
You do.
And so do much of our management team. But this particular trip, we have a whole bunch of folks, my whole management team, plus a whole bunch of other people in digital, marketing, risk, analytics, big data, our groups, to meet with people and to learn more about what we're doing, where we can partner. As I said before, to keep them a little bit scared, to make sure we use these things to better serve our clients. So we're spending a couple of days here, a couple of days in Seattle.
Well, let's talk first about the changing nature of banking in the digital age. I mean, fintech is the hot thing in Silicon Valley right now, although there's been some ups and downs recently, especially today with the Lending Club CEO stepping down. But talk a little bit about where you feel like you're on tech. How do you look at tech? Because I interviewed the CTO of Goldman Sachs, and obviously they're doing a lot of things like that, but different banks are doing different things.
Yeah, so I don't buy that fintech is completely different, okay? So technology has been changing the world since we invented agriculture. And, this technology, so my whole business career, technology has been a critical part of what a bank does. How you service clients, process your transactions, et cetera. And so the computerization, faster compute, cheaper compute, cheaper data, putting things online, that's been happening. I think the biggest difference now is happening faster. And it's also, I think the fintech companies are also very good at not just technology, but they're also good at, what I call business problems, reducing pain points, straight through processing, saying, why can't we do in one day what a bank takes 10 days to do? So we do a lot of this stuff ourselves. So we partner a lot of companies here. We invest an awful lot of money. We have our own huge big data department, which I think is as good as any in Silicon Valley. We have 22 million people bank on mobile. We have the highest rated mobile app. So, but the fact is, in all these businesses, you got to learn all the time what people are doing, what works better, and to get your own ideas, get your management team coordinated and thinking it through. So the whole purpose is to do a better job for your client. So if you look at banking, by the way, the cost of transacting, whether it's interest rate swap, what's moving money around the world, what's buying or selling stock, is a tenth of what it was 20 years ago. And it's faster, quicker, more secure.
So you're not one that's nervous about how people are going to change their banking habits. I mean, that's from a commercial perspective, but in terms of using banks.
I'm not nervous, but I think in a capitalist world, it's a good thing that people try to attack your business models. So I think that's the right thing to do. I mean, I think I applaud that. That's why we're all here. I think some of our businesses are not going to be hard to attack. I think there are other businesses which are more open to attack, like payments. So if you ask me about payments, and I'd say, yeah, there are a lot of weaknesses in the banking system.
You have a big payment effort.
Yes, huge. I expect to win in payments. But there are weaknesses that you can exploit. And it's not because banks are dumb, but some of these systems were built a long time ago. The Notch system that moves this ACH, I don't want to get too technical, is terrible. It's not terrible because I would change it tomorrow if I could, but it's 75 banks. They vote on everything. For example, we're building our own with a bunch of other banks, P2P system, real time. And it'll cover 60% of the clients in America, and then we're going to make it open to everybody. So we do a lot of what the fintech people say. What do you want? Imagine what you want. Imagine what the clients would want. And then can you look backwards and how you can build it? What's the inputs to get that thing done? So we are the biggest payments company, but it's also a reason to say, I want to make sure we are always the best. We're finding better, faster, cheaper ways, in this case, to help merchants So we're offering merchants very good deals mm-hmm. and data, and our own customers, whether it's rewards programs, like the Starbucks. We're going to be, by the end of this year, rolling out the Chase Pay mm-hmm. in Starbucks. It'll be Chase Pay online. It'll be Chase Pay with your mobile phone. It'll be Chase Pay with a credit card. Mm-hmm. And we're making it, it'll be Chase Pay in the Starbucks app. It'll be Chase Pay in our app. Depending on how the client wants to access this is what we're looking to do.
Let's stick to payments for a second. Yeah. You're facing a lot of people who want to get into this. Obviously, Apple, Google. There's Square. There's all kinds of players moving into this
Well, some
space.
Are doing niche things. They're doing things that we don't do or don't want to do.
Square, like, for
we part of the Square. Yeah. And the things we can do with Square, and I applaud some of the stuff they're doing. I think, you know, so far it looks like, you know, an Apple and a Google, they want to make their products, they want to serve their customers by making banking easier for their clients, too. I don't think they want to be a bank. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, in our view, we started with Apple Pay quickly because Apple Pay is not really competing with us. What Apple Pay is trying to do is saying, use your phone for more purposes. They want to sell more phones. Mm-hmm. They actually can help reduce fraud. They can actually do things that clients want. But inside of that is the Chase card. Mm-hmm. So I want my customer who has the Chase card, whether it's a credit card or debit card, to say, this is great. I can use it the way I want to use it.
Wherever
you want.
So you don't imagine they want to supplant you, that eventually they don't want to figure out this payments thing and then get the credit cards off of those things, payments.
They say they don't. I take them at the word. But even if they did, you know, even down the road, if people find different ways to compete and to do things better, faster, quicker, that is the way of the world. I'm not upset about that. I'm in favor of that.
So payments is one of your biggest efforts, being in the payment sector.
Oh, but digital payments, social media and marketing.
Right.
And we like something like 50% of our new accounts last year were millennials.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Most of that's from social marketing. You know, and that's the Facebooks and Googles of the world.
Right.
So it's really everything. It's big data. You know, we're applying big data, machine learning across the whole company. And I think big data is real. And mm-hmm. I think machine learning is real. And I think it's going to dramatically improve, reduce error rates, improve targeting, mm-hmm. Make it easy for customers, you know, get everything better and better and better. So mm-hmm. it has to be embedded in our DNA, which is part of the reason the management team is out here now.
Talk a little bit about getting that into your DNA. We have all these companies out here, various parts of your business. How do you move a bank, a bigger institution, just the way entertainment companies or media companies have had trouble? How do you get the DNA of your
Every business, you know, usually at the table is the chief technologist, the digital, the big data. So we're all together. We sit mm-hmm. around and say, and we study everybody. There's no competitor out there that you think we haven't studied and analyzed. Mm-hmm. And we look at what they do well, what we don't think they do well, what we mm-hmm. can partner with them, but they'll be a very tough competitor. And we build it into how we plan. So if you actually were our sessions, we're talking about what we're building next quarter, the quarter after that, the quarter after that, the year after that, mm-hmm. that we think will be better for serving clients. For example, the Starbucks, or for example, the P2P in the banking system. Mm-hmm. And we have lots more stuff coming. So, and some of these competitors will be quite good, and some, you know, will struggle or want to partner with banks for different mm-hmm. reasons they thought.
But within your own organization, how do you get people thinking like that? Or do you think they've always thought that? You seem to think
we've always done a little bit. I've always had the technology at the table, always. They mm-hmm. got to be at the table. You know, business is not, you know, we separate the world, sales, marketing, tech, ops. Now, when we sit at the table, we're all together. Mm-hmm. You can't separate them that way. It's working together. You work out what is the better mm-hmm. thing mm-hmm. that works for the client, the reducing the pain points. And so at every business, these things are being reviewed and talked about. Mm-hmm. We have fabulous people. We also cut across the company. So in addition to that, we'll have a meeting about just digital. Mm-hmm. We'll have a meeting about just cyber. We'll have a meeting about just technological issues, a meeting just about cloud. And then we go educate everyone how we can use these things to do a better job for the client.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about cyber in a second. But in terms of training your people and figuring out how banking works in the next millennial, for example, do you sit around and say, what's a modern bank going to be in 5 years? This is the way the auto industry, you know, Mark Fields, I just was talking to him, what's a car look like? It doesn't look like what it looks like today. And a bank certainly doesn't. If you're talking millennials, they don't enter banks.
Some of these changes might be quick. Mm-hmm. Some might be slow. So what's happening to the bank, so like I just said, 22 million of our clients already bank online.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so account opening online, banking online, rarely using branches, that's going up. The ATM, the amazing thing is it's what ATMs do. ATMs actually reduce the back office processing that takes place in a branch. Mm-hmm. So it used to be that 60 or 70% of the people in the branch did operations, depositing checks, giving people cash, money orders.
Right.
The ATM can do most of that now.
Mm-hmm.
So the branches are getting smaller, more automated with ATMs, et cetera. The number of tellers in the branch is coming down. Mm-hmm. But as life unfolds, when you have more small business specialists, more investment specialists, more...
So you're redeploying them.
Yeah, exactly. It's more advice. Mm-hmm. So over time, the branch will be smaller, things like that. But I'm not sure it's going to happen overnight. something like 25 or 30% of our branch business is small business. Mm-hmm. And small businesses and middle market companies need branches, you know, to deposit checks, cash, coin, which mm-hmm. is how they're getting paid. And mm-hmm. that's not going to go overnight. They're going to need that for quite a while.
So you feel like that eventually the bank will go away, though,
the physical bank. I think eventually they will be – no, I think there'll still be places where you want to go to get personal face-to-face advice and expertise that you just really can't do elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And those people might be hooking up with other people by telepresence, so it might be more efficient than that.
Could be bots.
It could be that. And they might be in the second floor, not the first floor. There are a whole bunch of things you can envision happening. But right now, we need those branches to serve clients.
Right. So interestingly, I showed you when we got here this article in the New York Times that says Jamie Dimon wants to protect you from innovative startups, which is not a very nice headline.
Well, it's full of shit, that headline.
Okay, so, all right, good.
And they should be more careful when they write things like that. If you read it more carefully, what I said in there was... This is your letter.
You wrote a letter.
It's my chairman's letter.
Chairman's letter. You can go read it.
And I was trying to be very accurate and fair. Mm-hmm. I said that some people have been taking data for many, many years after you gave them permission to stop using the product. Mm-hmm. I said that I don't think the clients understand what data is being taken or how it's being used. And these things are just accurate. We know for a fact. Mm-hmm. The third one says that a lot of the data is being resold, which was not the original intent or may not have been. And the fourth, I said it changes the liability in some cases, not all cases. He questioned it.
Yeah.
I didn't say in all cases, but I said in some cases, you know, if you wake up tomorrow, there's no money in your bank account.
Right.
That's my problem.
Right.
Okay. But if you gave your bank passcode away to a company and that company itself did something wrong, that's their problem. And so, you know, the clients should understand when they give the bank passcode, they're increasing their risk. And then what he doesn't mention there, which is really important, I said, we want our clients to use the services they want.
Right, right.
He says, we're going back to be responsible to say to these companies that you have to make it clear what the data you are giving and why you need it, that you have to make it clear if you're going to remarket it, and you have to make it clear to the client what you're going to do if by your fault that the money is taken or something like that.
And by that,
those conversations taking place. And I've heard it from everyone here I spoke to today acknowledges this is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
What data people have, how they market the data, how they sell the data, how they use the data, and then you on the phone right now, I guarantee you push that I agree button, you know, 30 times. Mm-hmm. Well, we actually took out all the contracts that you agreed to. So I'm not going to go through all the names of the company. And you'd be shocked what you agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite clear to me that it's being used the way they said either.
Right.
We found a couple of examples that we don't think is accurate. So you know, to me, this is just a good discipline put in place. What people take, how they use it, why they use it. Sunset, the taking of information if you signed up for a service and you stopped using it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you shouldn't be giving information outside forever.
All right. We're talking to Jamie Dimon, who is the head of JPMorgan Chase, one of the most important banks in the country, about banking and the way it's changing. If you're always on the go like myself and don't have time to sit down and read, audible.com is a great source to be able to catch up on the latest bestsellers. Listen to it while on the road or at the gym. Audible.com is a leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Audible carries audiobooks in every genre imaginable: business, classics, history, and self-development, just to name a few. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audible.com/decode and choose from over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/decode, that's audible.com/decode, and get started today. This episode is also brought to you by SoFi. SoFi is a new kind of finance company that's helping people get out of student debt faster. Refinancing student loans with SoFi saves members on average $19,000. SoFi even partners with companies to help pay off employees' loans. Talk about a great employee benefit. See how SoFi can help you at SOFI.com. Terms and conditions apply at SoFi.com/legal. We're here with Jamie Dimon, the chairman and CEO of JPMorgan Chase, and we're talking about banking issues. We were just talking about a story in the New York Times about that you don't like innovative startups, essentially said that, and you don't agree with that.
No, it was an irresponsible headline.
All right. So,
and we work with 100 out here, and we're out here all the time.
Right. So talk a little bit about innovative startups. I mean, some of these that they were talking about in this article are aggregators, and they try to aggregate your information and use bank data and all kinds of things to give you advice, the mints, the acorns, or savings. Should you be more into that, or are you letting them do that?
No, of course. Well, sometimes I can't aggregate. Well, I probably could aggregate mm-hmm. data from four different banks. I'm not against mm-hmm. an aggregator saying I get permission from the client. I aggregate this data mm-hmm. because the client wants an aggregated basis. And here's what I'm going to do with it. I'm fine with that. It's just how they use it.
Right.
If I'm helping the client or just mm-hmm. selling their data, those are right. two completely different things. Right. As long as they understand that maybe that's the way their aggregate is paid. So, but robo-investing, we'll probably be doing it at one point.
Mm-hmm. This is a pure online taking bank. Money out of people's accounts and saving and just
yeah. Oh yeah, we could do a lot of that stuff ourselves.
Yeah.
But some of these people are very good and they have very good ideas, and mm-hmm. we may partner with them because they've already mm-hmm. built the system of software. Mm-hmm. We're partnering with OnDeck. Mm-hmm. It'll be a Chase loan, Chase Credit on Chase's balance sheet. But they've built some great systems. We're going to be testing with them how we can work together, do a better job for mm-hmm. clients that we have a little bit harder time reaching.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also look what they do. There are a lot of these loans we can also make in one day, mm-hmm. not 15.
Right.
And we can
right.
add revolvers on top of the loans we already have.
Right. This is the SoFis of the world and the others. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think some of these people are doing great stuff and they may
how,
be.
How do you look at the rise of those kind of lenders? Because you're a lender and these are slightly different ways of doing it, but they're trying to reach out to customers in different ways.
Yeah. Some are niche businesses we're not going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We are not going to do student lending for a whole bunch of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So, some are loans on top of our loans. Some are they do a better job, not because it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bezos says your margin is my opportunity. In some cases, these things are more expensive. They're not
right.
cheaper.
Right.
But the clients love them because you can pay it off in 12 months. It might be 15%. You want to buy a truck,
mm-hmm.
And you don't have to go through the torture process of a bank. But we should be doing that ourselves too, right? I mean, shouldn't we be, if you're a client of ours, you have a $200,000 loan,
mm-hmm.
maybe just give you an automatic $30,000 line of credit. So these startups are looking at weaknesses in banks and providing services. And some will end up partnering with banks and some won't. The lending side, whether you're lending to a person or a business, I mean, all of us can get credit right. All big data can improve credit. So whether you're a bank or a startup, those things can be done. Making the pain points less, banks have to redo their systems and stuff, which is doable. Sometimes it takes a longer period of time. But one issue that I always raise about P2P, and this is not, I'm not saying this because I disagree with them. I'm saying this because it's something they should deal with. The lender to them might not be always be there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hedge funds.
Well, they had that issue today with Lending Club.
Exactly.
With the CEO's
hedge funds,
down.
Individuals, securitizations, they are not there in bad markets. And that's what, and I've been saying it for years, that's what someone just learned
lending.
In January. Well, I think they need some permanent sources of funding.
Right.
So you could look at that as being a deposit, a long-term relationship with the bank. You could raise long-term capital.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to create long-term funding so you can continue your business.
Which is largely a marketing business.
Well, yeah.
It's a lending and marketing
business. Yes.
But it's getting people in the door in a certain fashion.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about Silicon Valley and the IPO market. It has been slow here.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have a big business in that.
We are one of the biggest investment banks here. We're probably the biggest investment bank in M&A and IPOs.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing nothing but growing here. We're 3,000 people here. This is kind of a home of ours. And so the IPO market, I mean, first of all, it's always open and closed. It's always been true. That's not different today than it was before. And it's, I'll call it like, a little bit like an accordion.
Mm-hmm.
And it reacts to a whole bunch of different things about what people think the future is and valuations.
Right.
And so I think last year there were, 27 IPOs.
Mm-hmm.
I think so far this year there's been one.
Right.
Which we did,
yeah.
I believe. And so it'll open again.
But why isn't it open right now? What is your take on
I think the
it's not a bad economy. It's not a bad...
It's different for every company. But people have higher ideas of valuation than the market's going to give them right now.
Mm-hmm. You're being
there's
kind.
There's a lot of competition. So you mm-hmm. talk about peer-to-peer.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're the first or second peer-to-peer, it's kind of exciting. When you're the sixth or seventh, it's not quite as exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So there's competition in Silicon Valley to Silicon Valley. I think it's clear that not all the competitors are going away, like banks. They're going to be here competing. So I think it's a whole set of, there's all these stories about the unicorns, being unicorpses. And so, when people,
I haven't heard that
there's
one.
A deep site, I heard that today.
Did you? I like it. Unicorpses.
There's a deep psychological reaction to IPOs, and.
Why is that? When do you, you're saying accordion, but when does it go back? This has been unusual.
On the counter.
Right.
I think, again, I don't remember the exact number, but there were five or six or seven private equity placements.
There have been a lot of those.
That have been done so at pretty damn good valuations
mm-hmm.
of companies who wanted some money but didn't want to go public.
Right.
So it isn't that companies can't raise money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think 40% of that was like four
so
or five companies.
Why don't these companies want to go public? The ones that can, the Ubers of the world, maybe Airbnb.
They have other sources of capital too.
Right.
And so in the old days, sometimes people didn't. Now there's a little more staying power. The, you know, venture capital's got, you know, plenty of money to continue funding some of these companies. And, you know, being a public company, unfortunately, has become more painful, which I think the number of public companies has gone from something like 8 or 7,000 to 4,000. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a terrible thing, but I'm not sure it's a great thing for America.
Because
you sit down with all these companies that want to go public, there's a long list of negatives. Painful corporate governance, you know, a lot of focus and compensation, all the public interest groups get involved in what you do inside the company. Your shareholders.
Leak memos to me. I get them all.
Exactly. Yeah. There's tons of stuff. So you can imagine people saying, you know what, let's stay private as long as we can.
Right.
I'm sympathetic.
Do you imagine it's going to turn around when you're talking about this accordion?
Oh, absolutely.
What will spur it? Is there something that creates it? Or suddenly Uber will say, I'm going public now, finally?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But normally it's something like that. There's a triggered event. You know, some company, you know, has a great victory. Sentiment, you know, you've seen sentiment change how many times?
I mean, absolutely.
Sentiment's like the tide going in and out.
Right. How do you get companies to use you for an IPO versus others?
Well, I think,
How are you marketing yourself right now?
Well, I hope that we are very steadfast with our clients. So all around the world, they're in good times and bad times. We did not need TARP, which most of the American public does not know. We helped the federal government, the state government, in the crisis, including by buying Bear Stearns. You know, we stayed in Spain, Italy, Greece, Argentina all those years because, you know, our clients, they rely on us. And whether it's a government or a company or a private company, and we've been the same here. So remember, part of our heritage here is Hampton and Quist. So a lot of our bankers have long-term tenure. They're trusted by their clients, and they're supported with enormous brain power by the rest of the company. So think of, we can get you the best advice anywhere you need in the world. We know the financing markets all around the world. We always tell our bankers, be honest. Treat people like you would treat your mother in terms of what their options are, what the pros and cons are, what all these things are. We support them before they go public. We support them after they go public. And we provide plenty of other services, too.
Is it critical to have the IPO market return for your business? Or is it just...
It's not critical. I look at that like the weather. We will be doing here banking for clients. And if the IPO market's not good or bad the next 6 months or 9 months, it's not going to change our strategy.
And what about your own investment?
Silicon Valley, San Francisco are creating great companies over time. We will be here forever. So, you know, you've never seen J.P. Morgan, at least during my tenure, you know, jump in and out, you know, try to guess how good the market's going to be, cut way back.
Right.
In fact, we've added nothing but resources, more specialization, better research, all the things that I hope companies would want to see if they want to go public.
What about your own investing in companies? You've done some active investing here in various
companies.
Yes,
we often buy a
piece of
company.
What are you looking for when you invest?
Well, usually some of the companies... And I always get this wrong, so I'm not giving you any names because they always get mad at me and say, Jimmy, that was private. You shouldn't have said that.
Please do.
Yeah. No, but usually we partner with them and we're going to give them a lot of business. So we buy 5 or 10% of the company.
Right.
And
what
we
are
like
you looking
that.
For when you do that?
Well, if we're going to partner with them all, that we think they're very good at what they do, they get a lot of value. It's something we're not going to do ourselves. They need our business, and we'll probably be giving them business for a long period of time, and we have an evaluation. We think we'll probably make some good money, in addition to having a great partner. So,
Is that a big part of
I think we have 70 various investments.
Yeah, you do. You have
and
a
some
lot.
Of them I'd be willing to buy, too. I mean, right. The whole thing.
Yeah, you have a lot.
But very, very often what they're doing here, they can do it over a much broader base of companies. You know, so if sometimes you're building this system, it'll be used by 40 people. It's very expensive to build it for one. So, I mean, I just give you one example. You know, we torture clients now with know your customer. So we have to have a huge amount of data on a customer before we can even onboard them and then run it through AML and, you know, anti-money laundering. You know, if someone could get all that data on these big clients and it's done at subsidiary, it's got to be updated, it's done by officer. When we get that money information of a client, so do 8 other banks sometimes. So, of course, the far better idea is to have a utility that does it once. We can all rely on the information. It's better for us, and it's far, far better for the client. They don't have to maintain one file.
We're talking with Jamie Dimon, the CEO and chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase. We'll be back. This episode is brought to you by GoCD, the open-source continuous delivery server created by ThoughtWorks. GoCD is the best integration and deployment tool you probably never heard of. It offers complete customization for your software's individual needs. There's no plug-in or workaround needed. GoCD just goes. Spend more time delivering and less time configuring. Commercial support and enterprise add-ons, including disaster recovery, are available. Download GoCD for free at www.go.cd.
This is the time in the podcast when I ask Peter Koffig about what's coming up on Recode Media. And usually I'm in San Francisco and he's in New York, but today I'm here in the Big Apple stalking him in his strange little den here at a comedy club.
Welcome back, her.
Thank you. It's quite colorful here.
You've been around. You've seen New York before.
I have. I am a New Yorker, actually.
You feign as if you're a West Coast native.
No, I am a New Yorker. I am a Californian now, but I am an East Coaster from way back.
Welcome back to our Dirty Grimy Club.
Well, thank you. I like it a lot. So tell me about your Dirty Grimy podcast.
Appropriately, we had a guy who runs the entire live music business, Michael Rapino. Mm-hmm. He's the CEO of Live Nation. So if you go to an event, if you go to a concert, if you go to Hamilton, if you buy a ticket to pretty much anything, he's made a little bit of money off you because he controls Live Nation, which controls basically all the concerts. If you see Beyonce this summer, you're paying him. And he also runs Ticketmaster.
Right.
The much hated Ticketmaster.
Much hated. I was just going to say, I was just thinking bad things in my head while you were saying that.
Very important. And again, as the music business has sort of collapsed, CD sales don't exist anymore, digital downloads are going away, his role in the music business becomes more and more important. So if you care at all about music and entertainment, he's someone you want to pay attention.
And also Live Nation's had kind of a rocky history. Irving Azoff was involved. There was all kinds of different things that happened there.
Yeah, and traditionally the concert business is kind of a back of the club, grimy dollar bills being exchanged, guys with rough accents threatening each other. And what he's done successfully is made this a public business. Wall Street thinks it's quite valuable. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to figure out, all right, what do we do from here? Is there a digital play here? There's some VR talk. But really, it's about...
You say, just dismiss that. Some VR talk.
I don't even think he's that serious about it. Yeah. But the point is, what else do you do besides get people to come to see Taylor Swift or Beyonce? What else can you do to make money? Is there a digital play? Is there other ways to extend that business?
And that's an interesting topic. I can't wait to hear about it. Michael Rapino will be on Recode Media this week.
Kara, thanks for visiting. Go back to your show now.
I will go back to the clean kombucha living that I have in San Francisco.
See ya.
We're talking with Jamie Dimon, the CEO and chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase. He's just a big banker, essentially. That's what you are. Let's talk about trends. Let's finish
hopefully
up.
Hopefully a good banker.
Well, you know, some people have different opinions of you. I don't have any. You did get, you know, the rage from the Wall Street bailout is certainly manifesting itself in this election. Mm-hmm. How do you look at that? I mean, because it's clear they're talking about the big banks, Hillary Clinton, Trump is using it. It's really become a topic that's come back from 2008.
There's rage about banks. There's rage about big business. There's pure rage. And you know, I wish
unemployment, trade.
And I look at it. Look, there was legitimate reason that the American public got mad, both at Washington, big banks, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I pointed out this bank, it's not true that all banks were bailed out. Mm-hmm. You know, that one statement has made it just as unbelievable that people think about banks. Banks provide an absolutely necessary thing. So, you know, all of our clients do business with us because they want to. We don't make anyone do business with us. We hold their money. We move their money. We lend them money. We raise money for them. That's true for middle market companies, for small businesses. Our client SaaS scores are high. But I understand the anger. You know, I think we've had in America, you know, it's slow growth and lopsided growth in terms of the middle, you know, the middle income people. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. I think what we need to do is grow faster. You know, and then come up policies, better tax policies for like, I would greatly expand the earned income tax credit. Mm-hmm. Okay. I would, you know, we got to fix some of these things. So I would ask all these people raging, tell me what you're going to do that's going to fix the problem that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I give you, I'm not so sure
they have answers. I think they just are the, you know,
I know, but
they lose their jobs, they lose their ability.
I think whoever is the next president, if they fix immigration, we got to reduce corporate tax reform. The great bargain, because we are pushing capital and brains out of America today. Mm-hmm. And then we need to do something in education to help the lower income, the underprivileged, and inner city, particularly inner city schools. I would greatly expand the earned income tax credit. I think raising minimum wage is a completely rational thing to do. I just be careful about doing it equally everywhere. I think I would let states do different things, and I'd come up with training programs that if people lose their jobs because of trade. So I would be a big promoter of trade, which is great for growth, but we acknowledge the fact that it causes damage in a limited part of business. And where it does, we should have retraining, relocation, income assistance, and all those things so that that community can recover too.
Were you surprised by all this anger on all sides?
No.
It's not even left or right. It's both sides.
If you had spoke to most bankers, they expect to be part of the political season.
Right, for the political season. Do you imagine it dying down, or do you feel like this is going to be a topic for...
I don't know if it's going to die down. I hope that policies are made not because of populism, but they're made because they're going to help the very people the populists are talking about. There are rational, collaborative policies. You go all around the world. You know, I meet presidents and prime ministers. There are things that work. There are things that don't work, okay? And you can see evidence of this in Venezuela, Argentina, East Germany, most of Eastern Europe after the war, Greece. They don't work. We've been there, and we've China, you know, before, you know, they started changing policies 20, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we know of policies that do work. And you can see them in evidence all over America, Singapore, South Korea. And that's what we need to do. Acknowledge the problems and fix them, but don't kill the goose. So you even hear anger these days about technology. Mm-hmm. Technology is taking away jobs.
It is taking away jobs. But it will take away more.
But we live like we live today because of technology.
Right.
The health is better. The air is better.
Right.
You know, you got a supercomputer in your pocket.
I get
the food
that.
Is getting better.
I think when you lose your job, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. You're absolutely right.
No, but the point is, don't kill the golden goose that's made society so great for people. It's going to double the income of the world and the average person in the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take another $1 or $2 billion people out of poverty. Don't kill that golden goose. Fix the problem that it does create. Acknowledge it and then fix it. And again, that's education, training, income assistance.
Retraining, exactly.
So,
yeah, I just was interviewing Ann Wojcicki from 23andMe, and she was talking about radiologists will not have jobs in 10 years because computers will be able to read most
X-rays. I heard that today, too.
It's really fascinating.
But, you know, look, Warren Buffett wrote about farm workers has gone from 11 million to 200,000, or I forgot the exact number, but if you could have said back then, we're not going to allow those jobs to go away. So we still have 11 million people in farms.
Right.
We probably wouldn't do a lesser job of feeding people. Technology is a wonderful thing that's helped mankind enormously. Like, look at healthcare alone.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, and so, again, I understand the fear, but we need our politicians to say, okay, let's get the good part of technology and fix the bad part.
Right.
There was a great story one day. Milton Friedman was walking through Vietnam or China, something like that, and they were building a road. And they were building a road with shovels. Mm-hmm. And he said, why are you building a road with shovels? You can do it so much faster with less people with backhoes, which you have. And the person said, Mr. Friedman, that's a very good question, because we want the employment.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Friedman said, well, that's great. Why don't you do it with spoons?
All right, we'll talk about the impact of technology. Still does scare people, though, here and elsewhere, all over the world.
I know, but I think we're educating people the wrong way, and we're going to end up driving public policy the wrong way. And we need leaders to lead. That means explaining things to people and then coming up with policies that fit the downside of it. There are downsides to a lot of things, but you don't want to stop them all. There are downsides to flying.
Right.
You know, people die every now and then. Do you want to stop all air flights?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're downsized to pharma.
Right.
Sometimes they're misused. Do you want to stop using pills?
Mm-hmm. In that vein, look at what's happening with Apple, for example, with the federal government and encryption. Now, there's a big business, lots of jobs, lots of economic opportunity from the company over the decades. One of the most important technology companies at war with the government over an iPhone or an encryption. Yeah. How do you look at that?
We've had our own problems with the government.
Look,
they have always made one very important case, that this should not be decided by a judge or a jury, which will be decided differently everywhere. It's a very complex case. It really should be decided by the Congress, by legislation. And to do it right, you really need to get the people in the room of deep knowledge about civil society, data privacy, misuse of data privacy, you know, what these backdoors really mean, all those various things, because there are real issues here. And I don't think it's just be made, you know, out of anger or something like that.
Right.
And so,
One iPhone is not going to stop ISIS, I think, fixing one.
That's also correct.
When you look around at technology, what do you see right now that really excites you around things? Is it VR? Is it AR? Is it self-driving cars? Is there something that, you know, as you look around with a big banking company,
I think big data and machine learning are real.
Mm-hmm.
And are going to drive huge benefits for people for a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in healthcare, processing, any form of business, stuff like that. I think augmented reality is real, and it will make our lives easier somehow. Though it's, you know, I'm not a futurist. I can't completely imagine it, but I do think it's real. VR is hard for me to understand.
Have you tried it?
No.
And
forget entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I've read about the real use cases in healthcare and anatomy, and I'm sure there's gonna be some. It's hard for me to. I've not spent enough time thinking about it to give you a real answer about it.
What about self-driving cars, autonomous vehicles?
I'll make a guess that in 30 years it's illegal to drive a car.
Illegal.
Illegal, because it's so much safer to have an organ.
I don't know. I think it'll more be like owning a horse. You know, if you have a horse, if you like
horses. No, I think it'll be more like you need a pilot's license. We don't want humans driving cars,
right?
Because we now have gone from 35,000 deaths a year to 2,000.
Right.
And
right.
Therefore, if you're going to have to drive a car, you got to get a special license.
That's probably true.
And maybe you're right. It'll be like driving a horse. You'll,
right.
You go to a speeding place to drive your car. But,
right.
I mean, these things would be great for older people, for... It'll be wonderful for society.
Yeah.
Of course, there'll be some downside to it, which
right.
we should fix with training. And 100 years from now, it'll be, you know, 4 or 5 times what they are today.
Mm-hmm.
People will be working 3 days a week.
Right.
You know, they have more leisure, more entertainment, and everyone, people will be happier and healthier.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not stop the technology that's going to make that possible.
All right. What is your technology uses? Are you a geek? You know more than most bankers, I have to tell you.
I spend an awful lot of time on technology with the technology
people. You
don't
people Snapchat. You don't strike me as a Snapchat.
I don't, but my biggest technology is the iPhone, which I do a lot of stuff on. I read our stuff. I read our research. I use the apps. I mail my kids. I do all my corporate email on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do some of my banking.
Mm-hmm.
Check the weather.
Yeah.
I can control my house, like the temperature
right.
and stuff from here.
Is there anything really techie that you do? You don't have an Oculus Rift?
No.
You don't have a self-driving car, a Tesla?
No, I don't have. Not none of that, no.
Why is that? You look like a Tesla guy to me.
I play my music in here. Tesla's a beautiful car, but
don't.
No. I'm a New York City kid. I mean, I didn't have a car until I was much older.
So you know how to use the subway, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
you haven't done it in a while.
My kids make fun of me. They say, Dad, every now and then I go get a cab. They say, Dad, if you're going to go get a cab, you have to put your hand out.
Yeah, actually.
And the other one says, and when you get in, you have to tell them where you're going.
Oh, as opposed to
and when
just,
you get out, you have to pay
appears.
Them.
Right. Yeah. Well, Uber sort of changes
Uber's
that.
Uber's getting close to that, yeah.
Last question. What would you like Silicon Valley to invent? I ask everybody this question. I want a time machine. I'll give you an example. What would you like to see happen? Can be very serious. Most people are super serious. What would you like to have happen?
I would love... I think the biggest risk society has... I mean, first, I think they do a great job inventing stuff. I think big companies too do, by the way. I don't think they're the only people out there inventing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure they could fix this one problem. Bad public policy could really put us in a bad position.
Mm-hmm. So they want you to invent a politician?
Well,
print
maybe,
one?
Maybe,
3D print
maybe
a politician?
Maybe use more of their brain power to figure out policies that work, and then use some of that brain power to explain it to people in a way that people understand.
Yeah, you begin with the question that they have brains to start with. I mean, I think policymakers don't know much about technology at all. That's my impression.
No, but it's not the technology. It's you know, I was talking about earned income tax credit.
Right.
Real analytics can actually probably show. We actually have J.P. Morgan Chase Institute, which mm-hmm. we do real analytics, so we can go city by city and see what actually happens in credit card spending, debit card spending, as minimum wages go up, as oil prices go down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying, if you designed a great earned income tax credit, far
mm-hmm.
better than the one today, because it has multiple flaws than we have today, broader today, so it can apply to individuals,
mm-hmm.
not married families. It could
mm-hmm.
be more like a negative tax. It's automatic.
So you have better data for
so
them.
So better data, and then prove that works so well,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, and then you're rewarding people for working, and it could be a great thing. So we need more policy design.
Policy is anecdotal. A lot of policy is created anecdotally, not
exactly. But even big data can be moved there. We will be able to see as states raise their minimum wages, tell you what it does to employment and spending.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can prove with big data that, you know, raising it, you know, 10% improves both employment and spending, well, then it's a no-brainer. If you can prove that 20%, it reduces employment and ultimately reduces spending, then you don't do it. So you can do the same thing by testing taxes in certain states.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a matter of fact, you can look at states that have various types of tax codes and tax things and say, this one seems to be helping business
mm-hmm.
and jobs, and this one doesn't. Including healthcare, you could be doing that. So I do think a lot more could be applied to come with good public policy. You can have a dream 1,000 years from now. Okay, they're going to look at what we do with fiscal policy and monetary policy a little bit like bleeding the patient
mm-hmm.
in healthcare, like they did a couple hundred years
Leeches.
Ago. We don't have data. 1,000 years from now, they'll have a huge, you know, like a cockpit with all
mm-hmm.
the numbers, and
uh-huh.
you have automatic stabilizers, the payroll taxes, and investment tax cuts, or, you know, tax credits, and, you know, we're still learning how to run a modern economy.
Yeah.
So and I think it's a big deal, because bad policy really hurts people.
Right. Well, that is a very good thing to end on. We didn't even get to Bitcoin, but later, another conversation. Thank you so much, Jamie Dimon, Chairman and CEO of
JP Morgan
Chase.
Yes.
Oh, I know where you're from. Thanks a lot. If you enjoyed the interview as much as I did, be sure to subscribe to the show. Be the first to listen to future episodes or catch up on previous episodes, including some really fantastic interviews I've done with Lyft CEO John Zimmer, Yelp CEO Jeremy Stoppelman, and just last week, Representative Nancy Pelosi, just to name a few. And you can find all those interviews and more at recode.net/decode. Now that you're done with this, why not try our other podcasts? Recode Media with Peter Kafka comes out every Thursday. Then on Friday, you can hear me on Too Embarrassed to Ask along with Lauren Good of The Verge. And on Recode Replay, you can find audio from our events like the Code Conference, Peter Kafka's Code Media, and last week's Code Commerce. Thanks for listening. This has been another episode of Recode Decode. Remember to subscribe to the show and leave us a review at itunes.com/recodedecode. I'll be back here on Monday with another great guest. Tune in then.
This has been Recode Decode, hosted by Kara Swisher, powered by Digital Media. For more hard-hitting interviews with insiders from the worlds of tech, media, and politics, subscribe to Recode Replay on iTunes, featuring candid conversations with leading voices like AOL CEO Tim Armstrong, Goldman Sachs' CIO Marty Chavez, the team behind the hit TV show Empire, Shark Tank investor Mark Cuban, and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. They're all on Recode Replay.